We're on our series on Be Great, Finding Your Significance, not later, but today. And if you've not been with us, you can go to our website and catch up. We'll do a little reviewing this morning. Next week will be our final teaching, and then we're going to move into another series on participating with God in prayer, and the whole way of how do we participate with God in prayer. So we're looking forward to that as well. But we have two more weeks on this, so it'll be today we're going to be talking a little bit about the kind of facing this whole place of how we become great and this place of not just how we pursue it, but how do we actually move into that in that step. And so, as we've talked about before, everybody in this room, everybody actually in the world, has a God-given desire to be great. That may sound a little strange. Maybe that's too much for you. Everybody in this room has a God-given desire to be significant, that your life counts for something that's very significant, right? And there's nothing wrong with that desire. That desire is from God. And so as we look at that is now, you know, even desires to do other things and to be great in certain things, it's not a bad, well, I guess if your desire to be the best liar in the world, probably not good, or the best thief, it probably wouldn't go there. But for good things, like, you know, there's lots of different things that we go through. True greatness and significance does not come from what we accomplish. Now, that is really opposite of what you've learned. That's really opposite of what you hear. It's very opposite of what your natural tendency is to believe. But that is not where your significance comes from. Now, the thing about that is that, you know, it's fine to be great employee. It's fine to be a great basketball player, a great artist, a great person who's in great shape. It's great to be great looking like myself. I mean, it really helps. But the reality of it is you can be great in those things. You can be a great employee, a great manager. That's great to be those things. But those are gifts you have. Those are things that God has given you. And when you find yourself taking those things, you will find that it's an empty promise. It can be satisfying because it's how God's taught you to be and it gives your gifting, but it doesn't fulfill this deep desire for significance. So we find ourselves either pursuing or thinking, if I just get a little bit more money, if I get this better job, if I just get out of debt, if I can just do these things, if I can just accomplish things, if I can just get this car, this house, this clothes, you know, it's going to make me better. And then, according to the world, that's true. You're going to be more significant if you have more stuff. Or if you say, if I can just look a little better, if I can just get, you know, beat up a few more people, if I can just be in physical shape, if I have a position of power in some way, I move up to a manager, I become the CEO, or I get this degree, or these personal skills I have, if I could just fine-tune them and be the best in this area, and have this best gifting, have this best talent, right? Or maybe it could be the place of uniqueness. So you just want to be unique, or you just want to have popularity or fame, you just want to get an American Idol and just swoop to the top, you know? Whatever those things are, there's nothing in itself wrong with those things. The thing about it is why we strive after them is because of this deep need of true significance. And what you have to understand right off the bat is that is not the way you're going to get there. The other thing we talked about is this place of the path to greatness is not believe in and trust yourself. That is the message you have. In other words, if you want to become great, here's what the message of our culture is. What you can do is tied to those other things we just talked about, and the power and the path is this. You believe in this yourself, and within you, nothing else, just by you willing it, you can become great. And that's just not true. And so that's what we have to realize. We're up against that in a big way as we go through this series. Now, Dallas Willard, a quote I've said before, is the most important thing about you is not the things that you achieve. It's the person that you become. The most important thing about you is not the things you achieve. It is the person you become. And so this whole thing of this path to true greatness in the kingdom, according to Jesus, when his disciples were always arguing about being great, he didn't say, no, don't talk about that. Quit wanting to be great. He said, oh, yeah. That's good to want to be great, especially if you want to be great in the kingdom. You're on the right track. But they had the wrong idea, so he had to explain to them what greatness was. He says, those who are the greatest among you should take the lowest rank. The leader should be like the servant. Who is more important, the one who sits at the table or the one who serves? The one who sits at the table, of course, but not here. For I among you as one who I'm one among you who as one who serves. In Philippians, it describes Jesus' whole life in these, read Philippians 2, but this is part of that. It says we're supposed to have the same attitude of Christ. Don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. And then it shows you the payoff. And Paul says, may you experience the love of Christ. Though it is too great to understand fully, then you will be made complete in all fullness of life and power that comes from God. Pretty good payoff. Now, here's the thing about it. Look what it says here. This is saying, if you want the path, here's the path. Notice those highlights. Okay? Take a lower rank. You should be yourself a servant. You should, one who serves. Don't try to impress others. Don't raise yourself up, but think of them as better than you. Raise them up. Now, if that doesn't rattle you, you're not being honest. Because in our hearts, that's really hard to think about that. You know, we find ourselves in this place where this whole thing of these particular things, we think, I don't know if I want this. So let's just, you don't have to say this out loud, right? But honestly, what do you think about that? Not what your church talk says about that. What do you think about that emotionally? Like, what does that do inside of you? You say, here's your answer to great significance. Serve everyone and put them above yourself. Lower yourself to a place of humility. What do you think about that? I don't know. For me, it's a little alarming sometimes, if I get honest about it. I remember growing up as a new Christian, I had lots of things I underlined. This was not one of them. I was hoping it would disappear the next time I went and buy it, right? And I don't know if you know that, but it's a spot of understanding that, you know, there's this place that we think of being a servant, we think of losing. We think of putting someone's interests above our own as this would be hard. And we kind of fully understand, though, wait a second, I think this would be good, right? Because we've been on the other end of it, haven't we? When someone loves us that way, we understand the power of it. So we think, yeah, it's powerful for them. It's exhausting for me. That's how we think oftentimes. But what I want to propose is it's where the power comes for you and for those that you serve. In fact, I would say maybe there's more power that comes to you and more significance comes to you than what the person you serve is. It's this upside down of understanding the kingdom, you know? You know, for me, it's, you know, when I think of that as my life, okay, here's your life, I think that sounds exhausting to me. Doesn't it, you? In your flesh. I mean, you may say I've tasted different than that, but doesn't your flesh say that sounds exhausting? Doesn't there something that fights it right away when you start even listening to that? All right? So, you know, when I think of serving others, I think of often it being powerful for the other person, but really kind of probably a good thing to do that kind of tires me out, but God will reward me later. You know, and that's just a wrong view of it. Before I became a Christian, I started thinking about this. Before I became a Christian, I started going back and thinking about my friendships. And I had a few people I hung out with, and it's a pretty narrow crowd. And we really didn't show a lot of care for each other, but we didn't hurt each other. That's the best way to describe it. We did stuff together. We hung out together. And there's this whole other crowd that I wanted nothing to do with. Some I would avoid intentionally. I had this narrow focus. And I began thinking about that. And I remember, I don't ever remember being a servant to my friends. I mean, I'm not saying I was mean. I didn't, like, you know, beat them up or, you know, mock them or anything. But it's like it was an exchange program, you know? I cover you, you cover me, okay? I bought lunch last time, you buy lunch this time. It was that kind of thing. We got along, right? It was my friend. But I started thinking, this one guy that was older than I was, and he had a car and I didn't, and I was about a mile from the high school I lived at, and I didn't live there, but I felt like it. But I had to go to, and he picked me up every day. I never once paid him gas money. I never even thought about it. I don't think I ever said thank you. I'm even telling you, I don't know if you were like this when you're, maybe you were a lot more moral and godly than I was when, before you came to Jesus. Some people are, you know, I've seen non-Christians that are great, have great morality. For me, it was like, I'm just focused on surviving. And it was all about me. And I couldn't think much further than that. And then I remember, though, then I got to this place in which that, you know, I was nice to my friends. I narrowed, my field kept getting narrower because people became such a pain. You realize people are a pain? They're not very nice all the time. So when it's a pain, I just went down to a narrow focus. It used to be, and actually had one good friend, kind of, you know? Because it's too dangerous out there, you know? And so for me, I got to this place, and I didn't really care that much for these people, but I hung out with them. And then this strange thing happened. I became a Christian, and I was supposed to go to church. And I had to be around all these people. I remember I was in this church service right after I decided, okay, I kind of knew if I was going to follow Jesus, I had to start going to church all the time, which is a good idea. But I remember looking around the auditorium and saying, I would have avoided everybody but two people in this building a few months ago. And they were all, they weren't like me. They didn't have my, and they were kind of strange. And then I got to a spot where me and a couple friends said, we're going to have a Bible study, because there was a lot going on with the young people at the time. So we're going to have a Bible study, and we'll just invite whoever wants to come. Man, a lot of people came. We had a really big crowd every night. And I remember looking around, there's like 20 people in my living room, and I'm looking around, and I like maybe two of them. And I didn't like the other people. I just thought, you know, these people are interesting. And then I had to teach about, here's what Jesus wants. He wants you to love everybody. And in my mind, I'm thinking, and I wish you wouldn't have come tonight, you know? So, I mean, and what's so strange about it is I got to this play. I mean, I've changed the name to protect the innocent, in case they still listen to podcasts or something. But Julie would always come up to me afterwards, and you couldn't get away from her. And I don't think she had a friend in the world, and she just would cling on, and you knew she was hurting, but you would just do everything to avoid Julie, right? That's how I did it, in a very spiritual way. And I remember there's this guy named Bill. And Bill thought he was hilarious. And he told jokes all the time and laughed. And no one else thought he was funny. And he talked even more than I did, which is extremely unbelievable if someone could do that. And I remember just, like, he's older than everybody. Dina was my Bible person. She was raised in this really strict Nazarene church. And she had theological discussions correcting me on everything I taught about every week. We go back and, you know, and I had to go, oh, that's nice. I'll look that up. And and then we had a couple of people that really were struggling. They had a terrible past, and they had issues emotionally and mentally, and they would just drift off. And I didn't know what to do with them. And so I started looking at this, and now I can honestly say I have great affection for all those names. But at first, it was just really hard. I looked around, and I would say most of the people in the small group were people that a few years earlier I would have avoided. So what it showed me that you can do a lot of things and step out, but when it gets to loving people, you know, that's the big one. Like, I'd gone full in as I decided to follow Jesus, and I know some people, you kind of slip in. I jumped in, right? And I quit cussing. Like, the day I said yes to Jesus, I quit partying. I quit treating women like objects. I was real stingy, and I actually started giving right off the top of everything I got because someone told me I should, and I thought, I don't want to follow Jesus. I started trying to learn how to pray, and I was really doing good on all those things. But you know what? You can be doing really good on all those things and miss the central thing. Do you know you can actually be in a spot where you know the Bible so well and know your how to pray and show up at church and serve and, you know, still have a hardened heart towards people. Your heart stays, it starts either just staying the same or getting harder. And quite honestly, that's kind of scary to realize that. And this is what's so important. Why is it that this whole thing of loving God and loving others is above everything else? It's because it has to be central above everything else, or nothing else makes sense. And it's by far the most challenging thing, because you cannot do what God says about loving people without his power. It is impossible, right? Now, we're going to talk about this place of, you know, the power of being a servant. And Luke, it says, now he's telling the disciples, you got to understand this. They're trying to figure out who's the greatest and who's this and going on. And he's taking the religious leaders, and all these religious leaders, they had robes and they had boxes in front of them memorizing scripture. They would be dedicated. They went to all the temple. They went to all the festivals. They tithed even a tenth of everything they had every time. And so Jesus came in to them and basically said, you're totally missing it. And this is talking about those people. He says, what sorrow waits for those who are praised by the crowds, for their ancestors also praised false prophets. But to you who are willing to listen, you know that? I like that. You know why he's saying that? Because what he's going to say, people shut down on. So he's telling us right now, are you ready to listen to this? This is, if you want to know how to find significance, it tells you. He tells you. He says, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who hurt you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, offer the other cheek also. If someone demands your coat, offer your shirt also. Give to anyone who asks, and when things are taken from you, don't try to get them back. Do to others as you would like them to do to you. If you love only those who love you, why should you get credit for that? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good only to those who do good to you, why should you get credit for that? Even the sinners do that much. If you lend money only to those who can repay you, why should you get credit? Even sinners will lend to others, sinners, for full return. Love your enemies. Do good to them. Lend without expecting to be repaid. And your reward from heaven will be very great. And you will be truly acting as children of the Most High, for he is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. This whole thing of being like Christ is this place in understanding that Jesus came to greatness by living a life as a servant and loving everyone in ways, to even on the cross, where he's loving the people who are crucifying him. It's the people who are next to him mocking him. He loved all the way through. And that's where he says, I did it. I'm ahead of you. You need to do it too. The same thing is true here. He's just talking about God loves the ungrateful and the wicked. And guess what? If we be Christ-like, we have to love our enemies. We have to love the ungrateful. We have to love the wicked. So as you think about those things, you know, for me, I get to places where the Pharisees see, if you guys ever played the game, you're getting hot or you're getting colder, that's like universal, isn't that still going on, right? Hotter, kids always say, it's hotter, colder, colder, hotter, cold. Pretty soon the kids just bumping and stuff. But the reality is, you know, the hotter, colder game, it's like the Pharisees have the crowd yelling at them, hotter, 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 you're getting really close to it, and they're just striving and striving and striving, and they're going exactly the wrong direction away from God. Because the crowd was who they were deciding their greatness from. Crowds are not who you want to decide your greatness. The masses of culture are not who you want to decide your greatness. You have to let God decide your greatness. You have to hear it from him. And so understanding that is that, you know, Jesus had a whole different gauge. And he went through this place and, on this gauge. And as soon as that child gets picked up, we're going to move over there. There we go. So move the next one if you would. There you go. And look at these words. What sorrow awaits those who are praised by the crowds? You who are willing to listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who hurt you. You know, do to others as you like them to do to you. And then, because the whole thing is it's like he's asking us, he's saying, I don't want you to like have a new improved human love, but do a little better at it. I want you to love in a way that's impossible to love as a human. You know, I don't know for you or not, but I have certain things in Scripture, and the best way to describe it, maybe you guys aren't like this, but I read it, I just don't know what to do with it. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying I want to say it's not true. It is true. I even kind of sometimes I even know it's absolutely true. It's like this, I can say, I've experienced someone who loves me, and I know the power of that. I know that's true, right? My brother, I always talk about my brother leading me to Jesus through a long conversation that lasted early in the morning. That was just the end of it. What really started it was he started serving me. My brother, who made me pay for rides places and mock me the whole way, began saying, you want a ride? Can I fix your transmission and spend 8 hours doing that? You know, who is this guy? Well, because I could tell he was loving me, not out of guilt or whatever. There was something had happened to this guy. He was doing something that I knew my brother, and this was impossible, right? So I even know that what that feels like. But sometimes I look at certain things like these verses that we go through and say, can I do that? Like, is that, I mean, because this is not some fringe section of Scripture. This is the whole section of Jesus' teachings. It's how he did all of life. It's what he says. That's why he says the first shall be last, and you know, and the last shall be first, and be the servant, humble yourself before God, and live. You know, it's just over and over again, right? That's why we say love God, love others. That's it. It's so central. So we say, okay, we can say, but it's not just like I love you. It's fine. I'm not mad at you. I love you. No, it's like no, I love you, and I'm actually showing you by these actions of service. Now that's radical to try to get to think that's what I live for. And so I, for me, in this whole thing is that I look at that reward and I think I like that. I want to be the child of God. I want to operate in that feeling of having this great reward ahead of time, but also experiencing now this pleasant, this feeling of favor with God, and I'm doing exactly what I'm here for. My life counts, right? I want that. But this is what I feel like. I had to find a picture because I'm very visual. This is what these kind of scriptures feel like. Like, I'm trying to figure out, I'm not going back to the bear, right? And I know that's my past, and I know the ways forward. But it feels like what that guy's looking at. Like, I'm not sure what to do here. You know that saying? Okay, you guys just go out now. Be servants to everybody. Love your enemies. You go, okay. You know, you just kind of like, but you know it's impossible. You know there's no way forward. This is the thing about loving, the thing about the reason that loving Jesus and loving God with our whole heart and loving one another, the reason they're always married is one connects to the other. You try to love people like it just said we're to love people, you will start needing Jesus in a way you've never needed him before. Because you're just going to be judging people like crazy. They're going to be ticking you off, and you're going to be hiding from people. You're going to narrow your field down, right? But if you start to love him, you're going to find Jesus. If you start finding Jesus, guess what? You start understanding love in a way you didn't know because he is love, right? So this thing happens. And you have to understand. And there's something about it that is so terribly simple and rattling at the same time. I've been at a spot where, you know, I've been at a place in which I think to myself, I have so much going on in my brain. Like, am I a good pastor? Am I a good grandparent? Should I have done this? Should I time manage my, should I have spent this much on the teaching? Should I have studied more? Should I have more of a quiet time? Should I have done that? Should I have done that? And I start getting into all that kind of stuff, and it gets too confusing. I got to have an Excel chart to just find out if I'm spiritual enough, right? And they're all good things. There's something really appealing about thinking, what's my day today? My day is to love everybody to greater degrees. Doesn't that sound terribly challenging and tremendously simplistic? Do you realize how, I was talking to God about this, and he says, David, do you realize how worn out you are by judging people or trying to just not judge people? I just believe this. I do it all on the inside, right? Because I'm a pastor. I can't do it on the outside. So I do it on the inside. But I find myself trying, and I get to the right spot, but I think I spend all this time, and what's wearing me out is I just don't love people enough. That's it. They did this. They did that. They cut me off. I did this. That boss is terrible. Well, what's the answer? Love your enemies. Love everybody. God's answer to your frustration is greater degrees of love. It's not fixing your circumstances, right? And so as you look at that, I just find myself in places where I want to just close with just a few things I think can be helpful. First off, kind of where do you start with this? First off, you got to believe if it's true. I mean, I encourage you to start reading Scripture in this view. Is this the most central thing of how you, that takes you to the place what God is asking to find your significance, loving people and caring about people as you connect to God? And if it's not, throw it out. If it is, decide if it's true. If it's true, what Jesus just asked us to do, what Jesus is telling us, it's possible, right? But understand that, you have to decide, to get there, you have to realize many of us, including myself, we all pursue significance in ways that sometimes are not God's best. And decide and give up on the world system of what significance comes from. Give it up. It's fine to do great at what you do, but when you're striving after that to make yourself feel better than or okay, it's not okay. But then when you get there, understand it's impossible. It's really good to understand this is impossible. Because the Pharisees tried it with all their might, and it was impossible. They didn't do good. They hurt people. It's impossible. But with God, it is truly possible, or else he wouldn't have asked us. And God has to be your motivation. It can't be guilt. It can't be because I told you that you should do this. Or, it can't be, okay, I'm a Christian, I should do it. It has to be motivated because God has motivated you to do this. After you believe it's true. And you have to understand you cannot do this in your own power. It's impossible. But God can do it in you. He can. Every person here, God can do it in you. And the last thing I say is understanding that God is really good about helping us. He is not a person who says, jump off the cliff. He starts telling you how to take the next step and where he's leading you. And have you guys ever tried to get kids to eat food? It's a real trick. You have to kind of like psychologically get them from being rebellious. They may love the food, so you don't like throw it in their face, put a pile of it, take it, eat that food. No, you say, take a little bite, taste it. And if you can get them to psychologically drop their berries and they taste it, they go, that's good, right? If you taste this, you'll want more. And you'll understand this really does work. So what I'd say is start with the people who are right in front of you. Don't go off to Africa and save the world yet, Just start with who's in front of you. Start being a servant to your spouse, to your neighbor, to your friends, to your kids, to your parents, Start being a servant to the neighbor next to you. Start being a servant to the person at your work, the people right around you. Start there. And then pay attention to the people that God highlights, especially those ones you don't like. I had a guy in a Bible study, he came in, he says, there's this one gal I walk into, she's like the receptionist, and she had a name that we won't repeat in church, and everybody hates her. And I was like really thinking, you guys are terrible, but he says, I hate her too now. She ruins my day. I walk in, and she just tears into everybody, and I know I'm not supposed to be like this. And so him saying that just kind of for the first time, and so he decided, okay, someone said something, I think you're supposed to pray for those people. I said, okay. So he did that. He started praying. And It was so funny because every week he'd come back, and as he prayed for this gal, God would tell him one thing to do, to not back down, to show love, to see. And by the end of a few weeks, he had the deepest affection for this woman. And she was still crazily mean. Which was easier for her, the before or the after? You see? There's freedom in this. We don't have to defend ourselves. We don't have to justify ourselves. We don't have to raise ourselves above people. We don't have to compare ourselves to people. We can just love people. Can you imagine how good life would be if you didn't judge everybody so much? That you still believe what you believe about Jesus, lived your life out, and you didn't condemn or judge. You let God do all the judging. We're not the judge. He is. And you love people and the truth of Jesus. You just love them. So the challenge here, the worship team, actually the worship don't come up because we have baptism. The challenge is this. Love somebody who is not easy to love by serving them and putting their interest above your own, and don't tell anybody. You know why you put that in? You know what Jesus talks about, do things in secret? Because we can't hold out. We have to be significant. So I just happened to mention that I cared for the homeless this weekend because I want to be significant, so I want you to look at me and say, whoa, David, you care for the homeless. That's great. Don't tell anybody. Do it, and do it in secret. You don't have to hide it. I mean, you know, people wonder where you're going. You can tell them or whatever. All right. Make a list of people that aren't easy to love and start praying for them. Now, here's what I know about challenges. About 15, 20 of you take them. The rest of you go, oh, yeah, that's David's challenge. I would like you to take this one, okay? I don't use my equity very often. Start this one. And let God, because this will take you to who you are, and it will take you to a place of relying on God in a way that you need to rely on God. And it's going to free you in ways and bring you satisfaction and significance in a way that nothing else will. And it'll be that, it's like me saying, just taste a little bit of this. Try it. See if it doesn't hold up, all right? Not out of guilt or fear, but out of choice, choosing to love somebody and putting their interests above your own.